The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So as I said earlier, I'm just back from teaching a 10-day concentration retreat at Spirit Rock. And so my last 10 days have been all about exploring being with the breath in a relaxed and comfortable way. And so that's what I'd like to bring this evening, is a little bit of an exploration around comfort, pleasure, ease with being with the breath. And to start this, I'd like to kind of set the context around it being okay to explore pleasure in meditation. I think sometimes we might have an idea, particularly in the insight tradition, of, you know, not altering our experience, not searching for pleasure. But the concentration, the path of concentration, clearly encourages an opening to pleasure. And to explore this, I wanted to just say a few words about the Buddha's own journey around this, his own path that led him to his understanding of how to free the mind from suffering, because that really was his orientation when he was a young man in his late 20s. He was very curious about why there's so much struggle and suffering in the world. There's one place where there's somebody questioning, you know, why is it that people wanting to be happy are suffering so much? And this was basically the question that the Buddha asked, and why is that? And is it possible, is it humanly possible to be free of suffering? And so that was his quest. He went out, he left his home, and went to study with the main masters of his day. And the first masters he ran into were masters of a very deep kind of concentration. So he learned about concentration practice at the very beginning of his journey. Let's see if I can adjust this. He learned about a very deep concentration practice at the beginning of his journey. And in that exploration, he mastered what are called, they're called formless jhanas. They're a kind of meditative absorption where basically there's a kind of an experience, I would say, of not experiencing bodily. They're purely mental. And so you kind of transcend the body or have an experience that is without body. And so no physical pain whatsoever, apparently very sublime, very blissful states. And he mastered those. But when he came out of those states, he discovered, you know, there's still suffering. You know, it's like people are still dying, there's still a lot of pain, you know, there's still people pretty miserable. I still get miserable. I still get reactive. You know, well, okay, so this is not the answer to my question. And he asked his teacher, is this what you teach? He checked his own experience. He says, this is what I'm experiencing with your teaching. Is this what you're teaching? Is this the highest that you teach? And his teacher said, yes, this is the highest that I teach. You have mastered my teaching. Teach with me. Be my co-leader of this community. And he basically said, this is not what I'm looking for. And so he went on to other teachers. And the second teacher was a similar kind of practice, as a slightly a deeper form of concentration, but still not answering his own question. And so the next thing he practiced were, so this side of his practice was kind of like the really blissful side of practice, apparently. I mean, the states of concentration, I have not attained these states of concentration that are described in this side of his journey. But, you know, from what I read and understand, they are very, very blissful. So there's that side of his journey where he began. And then he decided to switch to another path, which was essentially attempting to transcend experience, transcend the physical realm through severe austerities. There are descriptions in the suttas about how much pain he went through in this time, you know, basically stopping his breath so that he wouldn't breathe as long as possible. And then just other things like not eating food. It said he got down to a single grain of rice a week. His description of his body was that when he touched his belly, he could feel his backbone. So very, very thin, very austere practices. Probably things like not sleeping, things like that. And at the end of that time, too, he's just about ready. He's basically so weak that he's going to die, you know, because he's been not eating. He was eating one grain of rice a day or a week or something, so very little nourishment. And he realizes, I'm about ready to die, and I haven't found my answer yet either, so maybe this isn't the way either. And so he got his health back, basically. He nourished himself and began reflecting, you know, what, you know, the austerities weren't the way, that other, the concentration practice, what's the way? And in that reflection, a spontaneous memory came to his mind of when he was a child. He was watching his father perform a kind of a ritual, and he was sitting in the shade of a tree and spontaneously apparently entered into a certain state of concentration that was still was concentration immersed in the body, so what's called a concentration of, basically a concentration of body, with connected to the body, a concentration connected to the body. So still experience of body. And as he had that memory arise, he had the thought arose, maybe, is that the way? Is that the way to head? And as that question arose to him, he thought, yeah, I think that is the way. And I've been curious about that moment in the Buddha's reflection, in what was reported about the Buddha's story, because, you know, he talked about the first teachers that taught such deep concentration that he understood that was not the way. The austerities weren't the way. And then he found this other kind of concentration, which in the descriptions in the texts, the concentration that he remembered when he was a child is kind of the beginning stages. So you'd have to go through that in order to get to the deeper stages of concentration. And so he must have experienced that with his first teachers. And so I've been wondering, I wondered quite a bit, you know, what is it about that memory, and what is it about his reflection there that made him think it, this kind of concentration is the way, whereas the other kind of concentration wasn't his answer. And some of it, I think, has to do with those first teachers that he came across. Their practice, their teaching was those states, was attaining those levels of concentration, putting the mind into that state, resting there in bliss, coming out of it, maybe getting some food, going back into that state, something like that, where that was the goal of the practice, that state of concentration. In the reflection, when he said, is this the way? Is this the path? Does this state lie on the path that I seek? What I understand that to mean is that it was a stepping stone that would help him to answer the question that he sought. It wasn't the answer itself. And so he began reflecting on that state And one of the things that really occurred to him about that state was it felt really nice. It was a very pleasurable state. It was a pleasure in the body. It was a pleasure of, delight and joy of body and mind. And his reflection at that point is said to have been something like, why am I afraid of pleasure that is not unwholesome? Why am I afraid of pleasure that is not connected to just wanting to have sense pleasure? Because the pleasure of that kind of concentration is a different form than like the pleasure that we get from having pleasant food or the pleasure that we get from having pleasant physical things around us. It's a pleasure that comes through the body, but it is a pleasure of the mind having let go of ill will and desire, sleepiness and restlessness. So it's a different kind of pleasure that he remembered and that he felt was, this is on the path. This is part of the path. But again, it's part of the path. It's not the end of the path. It's not the answer that he was seeking wasn't that state. But what he understood perhaps was that the searching to the question of, is it possible to be free from suffering, that kind of concentration would help him to find the answer to that question. And so what I understand from this is that the concentration that he was looking at is a tool that can be used in the service of understanding. Basically, concentrate the mind and apply that concentrated mind to the question of, what's going on? Why is there suffering? And I think that's what he was discovering there. And so the kind of main thing I'd like to explore today is about this pleasure, about this kind of exploration of pleasure and comfort in this concentration. How might we explore that? If we take to heart what the Buddha said about this kind of concentration, this kind of pleasure lying firmly on the path, then what does that mean for us in our meditation? There's another direction about pleasure on the path. There's a teaching that starts with, it's kind of the Buddha laying out a natural unfolding of the path. He says, if we start with ethical conduct, if we start with just refraining from harming other human beings and harming, engaging in false speech or taking what's not given, if we engage with ethical conduct, then a natural response of that, he said, we don't have to try. A natural response of engaging in ethical conduct is non-remorse. That we would naturally have non-remorse if we act ethically. And he said, a natural consequence of non-remorse is that delight arises. And we don't have to try to make delight arise when we're without remorse. And likewise, when delight is arising, there's a kind of a natural filling up of with joy. And with joy, there's a kind of a natural movement towards calm and tranquility. And with that, there's a natural movement towards just happiness. And then he said, the natural outcome of happiness in this way is concentration. This surprised me when I saw this. I thought that concentration was the result of huffing and puffing and striving and holding on to the breath and trying that this is not what I'm going to do. Happiness is the condition that supports concentration. That was kind of a surprise. And this is, again, this is what a kind of a different way in to a concentrated state. Rather than trying to hold on to the breath, can we create the conditions where it feels comfortable to be with the breath, where the mind kind of wants to come to the breath, a kind of an ease with being with the breath? What might that look like? So I've done some long retreats around concentration and have learned a tremendous amount about how my own mind gets hooked into the habit of doing and trying to create a state with concentration, and realizing that that is not actually so helpful, and finding my own way to a more gentle approach to settling the mind with the breath. And so that's some of what I'd like to talk about today. And for me, there are three basic steps to setting up what I'll call a container that allows the mind to more easily settle into concentration. So these three steps are relaxing the body and mind, connecting, after the body and mind are relaxed, connecting with the experience of breathing in a relaxed way. And so the relaxation of body and mind at the beginning is a kind of we attune to that so that we can recognize, okay, this is how we want to be in connecting with the breath, just this relaxation. So relaxing the body and mind, and then seeing, is it possible to connect with the breath in a relaxed way? And then seeing if we can create the conditions for a comfortable breath. So these three steps, relaxing the body and mind, connecting with the breath in a relaxed way, and seeing if there can be ease and comfort. Can we find a way to breathe comfortably, to have the mind at ease with the breath? So this is what I'd like to explore, these three steps. So relaxing the body. We did this in the guided meditation. This is what we started with. And you can play with following again here while I talk about this if you wish. You know, just relaxing the body through a body scan. Consciously relaxing the muscles of the body. Relaxing areas that feel tight. And even perhaps consciously checking into places that you might not normally think about. And so, you know, really scanning through the body. This is where I found for myself the exploration of relaxing inside the body. Because I found that, you know, the area inside the throat, it was possible actually to soften and release that a little bit. And if I just checked in, you know, may the heart relax. I would sometimes feel a softening inside the chest, the stomach, the intestines. So just checking in and seeing if there can be a relaxation of body. As you explore that, sometimes it's interesting to see, how does it impact the breath to relax the body? There's such a connection between the various systems of our body and mind, that as we relax a certain aspect of our experience, sometimes it shifts other areas of experience. And so as we relax the body, sometimes the breathing gets more relaxed. And so this begins to be a little bit of touching into a more comfortable breath. And then connecting, noticing the experience of breathing. This, for me, is where the exploration was kind of most interesting. Because my habit was to kind of go out, it's like, find the breath. Like, kind of almost like think about taking my head and putting it on my stomach or something, you know, just like, or looking down. It's like, kind of like, you know, sometimes I find the eyes kind of point, if I were paying attention here, then my eyes might be pointing here, or just, you know, creating some kind of an idea about putting the mind on the breath. And that created some tension, at least for me, it created some tension. And so beginning to explore what it might mean to receive the breath instead of trying to put the attention on the breath, to receive the breath. And I found different ways to explore this. One I mentioned in the guided meditation, kind of settling back and seeing what it might mean, like right now in terms of this kind of exploration. Don't look for a breath. Just wait for one to come to you. Like if you relax, the body will breathe. And perhaps you can notice that breath. Just however it is for you. Just, are you breathing right now? Can you know that you're breathing right now? So letting the breath come to you. Another way that I've found helpful is kind of almost imagining, not looking directly at the breath, but letting it be in my peripheral vision. You know, so if you're looking straight ahead, you can see things that are on the side, right? You can, if your eyes are open, you're looking straight ahead, you can still kind of see, like I can see my fingers moving in space here. So there's a kind of a peripheral vision possible. A kind of similar thing is available with our attention. So we might, for instance, be noticing something else, and sometimes it's helpful to actually put our attention on something else, like hearing, for instance. Like right now, you're hearing me. You're hearing me talk, hopefully. If not, maybe right now you could hear me talk. So just put your attention on the hearing, but then relax and see if while you're paying attention to my words and tracking what I'm saying, can you also know that you're breathing? Kind of like in the periphery of your attention. Can you know that you're breathing while you're hearing me talk? Sometimes with a kind of a less directed approach, again, the attention can illuminate the experience of breathing almost while we're not looking at it directly. I found sometimes that the breath was like a really delicate creature, a very shy animal, that if you look at it directly, it can kind of almost vanish. But if you kind of, you know, sit in the room and just like, you know, sit very still, and like things might come up to you. I was just at Spirit Rock, and it's kind of amazing there, you know, how all of the animals are just so relaxed. You know, you can just stand there and deer will kind of come right close to you, and birds even, you know, you're walking up the path and you come within like 3 feet of a bird and it goes hop, hop. You know, it doesn't fly away. It's like, so you can just be in the space and let things come to you. So this sense of settling back and perhaps putting your attention on something, but noticing the breath by not looking directly at it. This sense of this breath being a shy creature. Another way that I found for myself that helpful to explore the breath is to, you know, sometimes we are thinking about paying attention to the breath in a small area, like maybe just the little tip of the nostrils, or maybe this area of here of the belly. Or so sometimes expanding the sense of where we pay attention to the breath, maybe exploring it in a larger container, you know, a whole torso kind of experience, that can soften the sense of the attention as well, to pay attention to the breath in a larger way. But also, we can play with the idea of putting our attention in a small area. And so if we are paying attention just to this like little quarter-sized area at the tip of the nostrils, or, you know, orange-sized area in the abdomen, rather than thinking of the attention like having to come down to this little, like, quarter-sized space, like trying to fit all of our attention in this tiny little space, rather than thinking of it that way, see if you can have the concept or the idea of as if the sensations of that area get as big as the room. Like, you know, like sometimes we can have the sense of our awareness being large. Let the experience of the breath get large to fill the awareness, as opposed to having this idea that we're shrinking our awareness down to a very small area. For me, that was also very helpful. It's just like playing with perception. It's playing with the idea of the sensations being tiny and letting them be big instead. So the all of these ways that I've talked about are pointing to a receptive quality to paying attention to the breath, rather than a narrowing and a focusing, a settling back and receiving the experience of breathing. I used the analogy of the radio briefly in the guided meditation. And this kind of analogy, I think, is interesting. You know, if we think about what a radio does, it's got a receiver and then a tuner. You know, the radio is just, it's not doing anything. Well, it's got some electronics in there, but it's not like going out and searching. It's not searching for anything. It's receptive. The radio has the antenna, and that antenna is just kind of like moving through space and gathering radio waves. It naturally receives radio waves. And the tuner then, you know, if you have a wide band, what you hear is static. But we can, you know, narrow the range and pick up a channel. It's not that the radio is seeking out something. It's just receiving a particular frequency. And kind of thinking about the breath as a kind of a frequency of experience. So we attune to the breath. But still it's receptive. It's a kind of a receiving of the breath. This notion of a receptive attention, so it's both receptive and yet tuned to. It sounds perhaps a little paradoxical, but it's like we tune to a particular experience and then just receive what's there. Another analogy for this might be like listening to a symphony. You can kind of take in the gestalt of the symphony, or you can allow the mind to attune to the violin. It's not that the mind is creating what the violin is doing, it's receiving it. But it has to kind of do a little bit of attuning to be able to receive that particular instrument. And so very similarly, can we attune to the experience of breathing? Really helpful to keep this relaxed. In my own experience, finding a way to be relaxed and receptive was a huge part of how concentration could really be skillful. You can get concentrated by grabbing on and focusing down. I've done it. I know it's possible. Kind of like you get really narrow, and then at some point, like holding on, at some point it's like the mind just stays there. But that kind of concentration can be kind of brittle at the same time. You know, if you're exploring concentration from that way, as soon as the conditions change, like maybe a fire engine goes by or a motorcycle, it can break. So the relaxed, receptive kind of attention tends to have a broader, more stable basis for the concentration. And then the third step is comfortable, pleasurable, easeful. One of my teachers, the main teacher that I've practiced concentration practice in, had a kind of a funny analogy, but I'll offer it to you. He said that, you know, if you want the mind to stay with the breath, you need to give it something it likes. It needs to be happy to be there. It's very natural if the breath is comfortable for the mind to kind of gravitate to the breath. And so he encouraged a kind of adjustment of the breath. He said it's like, apparently in Thailand, if you want to catch an eel in the river, you give the eel something it likes, which happens to be the carcass of a dead animal. You put a carcass of a dead animal inside of a jar, and you put the jar in the river, and the eel will go right into the jar to get what it wants, to get its food. And then you take the jar out of the river, and you've got your eel. It's like he said, you know, the eel just will gravitate to what it wants. And he kind of used the analogy of the breath and the attention. If we give the attention a comfortable breath, the attention will more gravitate to that. And so he actually encouraged adjusting the breath, playing with the breath. This also was something unfamiliar to me in a way. It's like my training had largely been through the insight practice where we were really encouraged, don't mess with the breath. You just pay attention to what's happening. However the breath is, you just notice that. And here my concentrations teacher saying, no, you're welcome to it. Make the breath as comfortable as you can. Go for it. It's like, okay. And just playing with it, you know, a longer breath perhaps, a shorter breath, just adjusting, playing with the comfort of the breath. For me, I played with this a little bit. And then what I discovered for myself was basically asking, so what kind of breath would be comfortable now? And then not trying to do it, but, you know, just kind of dropping that into the meditation. You know, the mind had kind of started to receive the breath, and then it's like, okay, I'm with the breath. What kind of breath would be comfortable right now? And then just see what happened. I found actually that request often produced a subtle change in the breathing that just made the breathing be a little more open, a little more full, a little more relaxed. So playing with, even using requests can be a way to create a more comfortable experience of the breath. As the breathing gets comfortable, the experience feels very intimate. And my teacher was right, you know, once there's that kind of intimacy with the breath, it's almost like, I had this experience on one, it was maybe a 6-week concentration retreat. At a certain point, it felt to me like my breath was a secret lover. It was just so intimate to be with the breath. The mind was just so interested and happy to gravitate to the breath and meet it fully. So this the comfortable breath can create the conditions for a very intimate experience with ourselves. So finding our way to a kind of a container in which the mind can connect with the breath in this intimate way, not being afraid of the pleasure. As the Buddha said, you know, why am I afraid of this pleasure that is not connected with unwholesome mind? This inclination towards being present with ourselves is actually a wholesome thing. And so the pleasure that can come from that. Actually, something that I found as I've explored this kind of concentration, it was a surprise to me. It's like, wow, you know, the body really likes this kind of attention. It felt like the body was like a nourishment of all of the cells of the body. Like every breath was creating a nourishing environment for the entire being. So this is a wholesome form of pleasure, this kind of intimacy with the breath. So as we get intimate in this way, comfortable breath, the mind gets really happy too. The mind gets comfortable. And this is one piece that I also explored some, this comfortable breath and comfortable mind. I practiced for some period of time coming from the breath, trying to find a comfortable breath. And as I did that, I found, wow, you know, as the breath gets really comfortable like that, the mind gets really happy too. It's like, it's not, it's very contented. It is not searching for anything else. It's not averse to anything. It's just very contented with the experience as it is. This is a state where the concentration has begun to collect, to unify, and the hindrances begin to fall away. The hindrances of sense desire, of ill will, of restlessness, of sleepiness, of doubt, it begins to fall away. And when those hindrances fall away, the mind feels very comfortable. That state itself is sometimes called the bliss of seclusion, the bliss of being secluded from this reactive mind that's always wanting things to be different. This comfortable breath, the mind kind of landing with the comfortable breath, can create the conditions for the mind to just be perfectly happy with this moment of breath. So the mind gets comfortable. And that's a kind of a revelation for the mind to not be searching out something else other than what's happening. So this place of comfortable breath and comfortable mind, we can come at it from the direction of creating comfortable breath, of exploring comfortable breath. I also discovered in my practice that we can also come at it from the direction of comfortable mind. We can explore more through the direction of mindfulness, what it means for the mind to not be struggling with what's happening. And so this is the mindfulness direction of just noticing, okay, what's happening right now? Can I be okay with whatever's happening right now? Sound is happening right now. Body sensations are happening right now. For me, this was actually a very easeful doorway, settling back and just relaxing with the flow of being in a human body in this moment. And then as the mind got comfortable in that way, non-reactive to what was going on, I discovered it was pretty easy to then settle with the breath. At that point, the mind was so comfortable, it's like it could pick any experience. And I could choose the breath and allow the mind to settle more fully into concentration, which the teachings tell us is supportive for understanding why we suffer so much. The Buddha said at one point, practice concentration, because when one who practices concentration can begin to understand things as they are, begins to see things as they really are, begins to understand why we struggle so much. So much of our struggles have to do with our views, our opinions, our beliefs, our ideas. And when we practice concentration, we can begin to enter underneath our views, opinions, our beliefs, our ideas into what's actually happening in the present moment. And that begins to help us to see that so much of why we suffer has to do not with what's happening in the present moment, but with our ideas about it, our opinions about it. So this cultivation of concentration with comfortable breath creates the conditions for us to settle the mind and actually have something of a refuge at the same time, to be able to take in the sometimes challenging reality that experience is unreliable and impermanent and out of control. So much of experience is impermanent, unreliable, out of control, and we react to that. When we have this refuge of concentration, we can be much more able to meet that reality with ease, and to see how the reactivity of views, opinions, beliefs, ideas is optional, and we can begin to understand how to let go of the ways that our own minds contribute to our struggles and our suffering. So I want to leave some time here to see if there's any questions or comments about what I've talked about, questions about the practice that I talked about, or anything.
Hi. This talk was very timely for me. In the mornings, I've been listening to your receptive awareness guided meditation, and I've found it very, very helpful. But what I've also discovered is that, and I don't know if I have a question, I don't really want to be with myself. You know, when I finally connect to the breath and my body, you know, I get a very strong feeling, oh, I don't really like being with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to work with that and be self-compassionate about it.
Yeah, I encourage that. I mean, is there something in particular? Is it painful experience or emotional experience?
Oh, it's definitely emotional.
Emotional.
It's not. I mean, I have a lot of physical tension, but I find that breathing into my physical tension, even if it doesn't go away, I'm okay with it.
Uh-huh, yeah. And so sometimes with using the breath, you know, it's with, when we do pure receptive awareness, we kind of have to be ready to receive whatever's here. And sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're not ready for that. And so with exploring the breath, sometimes we can allow, it's kind of like let that be set to the side. It's like, ooh, yeah, there's a lot of emotional stuff here. And I'm not quite ready for that. I don't have to look at it directly. It's kind of like, can you breathe with or through the emotional stuff? Kind of like you can breathe with or through the body. It's like you don't have to push it aside, but Can you have a sense of what it might be to breathe with whatever is happening? You know, kind of let it be almost in the background and see if you can connect with the breath in the foreground, and see if you can explore how might it be possible to breathe comfortably with that emotional state. So even just asking that question, is it possible, might it be possible to allow the breath to be comfortable even as that emotion is there? And just see what happens.
Yeah, something that comes up when that happens is something Gil once said, don't solve, dissolve.
Don't solve, dissolve?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we sometimes can't dissolve, you know. But not solving is helpful, you know. It's like, so this is kind of an in-between thing, you know. Sometimes the mindfulness will create the conditions for something to just release, you know. Like we recognize, oh, look, there's some frustration happening here, and we can open to that frustration, and it does dissolve. But sometimes we open to that, and it's like, I'd let it dissolve if I knew how, but I don't know how to let this dissolve. And at that point, being okay that it's there. So neither trying to solve or feel like it's a problem that it doesn't dissolve. It's almost like creating the conditions in which a very organic metabolizing process can happen around that. So allowing the breath to be part of the massage or just the gentle being with something that's not just dissolving. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, hand the mic down.
So if I get to this point where I feel like the breathing process is really comfortable, enjoyable, like a massage, I was kind of worried, or I don't know, I was just thinking about what about the process of dying? It's like, would I be like really fearful at that point in my life where maybe I thought the breath was going to stop?
Mm. So are you pointing to something that arises for you when it does get comfortable, that there's kind of a...
Yeah, I think maybe I was thinking like, oh, I would develop a really good relationship with the breath, and then there'd be a point where
it's the last breath.
Yeah, and how would I deal with that?
Yeah,
given that relationship.
So, as I said, you know, this relationship is kind of a point on the path. So finding this comfortable breath basically creates the conditions for concentration to unfold. And with that unfolding concentration, then we don't just stay there with comfortable breath. We actually begin to investigate. We begin to explore, where am I stuck? Where am I caught? And the fact that we can come back to comfortable breath lets us kind of venture out to explore areas where we have some fear or some confusion or some aversion or some desire, and to begin to investigate with that concentrated mind what's going on there. So we don't stop just with the comfortable breath. We get to that, and then with that collected and unified mind, we begin to explore, in particular, changing experience. We start to look at impermanence, which is essentially what our last breath is really pointing to. It's the impermanence of our of our being. And so we start to explore impermanence, and we see we have all kinds of conflicted relationships around impermanence. When things are pleasant, we don't like it that they go away. When things are unpleasant, we want them to go away more quickly, and we want to be in control of them. And so we begin to see our... So what we do with that concentration is we start to explore our relationship to impermanence, unreliability, and things that are out of our control, and to kind of begin to let go of the ways in which we resist that. And so this, actually what I feel so much actually is what I'm doing is I am practicing so that I can be there when I'm dying. So that I can, I mean, that's like one of the most amazing moments of life, I think. You know, it's what a mystery. We will all die and we have no idea. We have no idea what's going to happen. I sure want to be there for that moment. And, you know, this practice, I feel, will give me the best tools, the best possibility to be able to release into that moment. Yeah, I feel that, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's about time to stop now. So, may you find your way to a comfortable breath that will support you in understanding your heart and mind. Thank you.